wanted to speak with you about what you hope to achieve.
Hello, and welcome to episode 40 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show in which me, Christy, and Angie talk about movies, and more movies. And, well, I'm Perry, and here are my co-hosts, Christy and Angie.
Hi!
Hey.
All right, so this week we are covering The Theory of Everything. We're going to talk about Foxcatcher, and we're also going to talk about all the crazy female-led superhero movies that are popping up, and the female director that just scored a big superhero movie too that we're very excited about. But we're going to start with The Theory of Everything, and Angie's going to take that one.
All right. So The Theory of Everything is directed by James Marsh, and it is a Stephen Hawking biopic. But mainly it covers his life from when he was a graduate student, in his 20s, all the way until, I think, right after A Brief History of Time was published in, I think, the 90s. Is that correct?
I think it goes a little further because we eventually see, his kids all grown up and stuff.
Right. All right. So it goes not to present day, but
it's
pretty
unclear
close.
How much time has passed exactly.
Yeah, well, that's one of the faults of the movie. We'll get back to that. So it covers his life, and when he was a student, he's still kind of able-bodied. He seems like a normal person, and we pick up shortly before he gets diagnosed with this debilitating disease that leads to him being in a wheelchair and using that computerized voice that we all know and love so well. But the focus is more or less on his romance with Jane Wilde, who is a fellow student that he meets at university and falls in love with and gets married to, and they stay together for a very long time. They have kids together. So it's a Stephen Hawking biopic, but its specific focus is that relationship.
And it's based on her memoir, right? About their time together.
It is based on her real-life memoir about their time together, yes. And so I think that's partly why she's such a strong character in such a strong presence in the movie. But overall, I just couldn't with this movie. My problem... I don't know. I don't want to make it sound like I hated it and it was just awful. But my biggest problem with this movie is that it's a Stephen Hawking biopic that never once bothers to really explain who is this person? Why do we care that we're watching a movie about him? Which is just such a weird thing. Maybe it's partly that the director or the filmmaker takes it for granted that we know who he is and why he's important, but it felt more to me like they didn't know why he's important, and because there are various scenes where, the movie is about a guy who's a scientist, and there are scenes where people are like, by God, Stephen, you've done it, science.
Yeah, it's very much that.
And there's so many of those, but at no point do we get any sense of, why his discoveries matter, why they're significant, why it's something that anyone who is not one of his colleagues should give two shits about.
No, that's a very good point, because they say all these kind of big theories, but they never explain, what do these big theories have to do with, I don't want to make this sound incredibly narrow, but how is the common man impacted by the things that Stephen Hawking has figured out? And they never really explain that, so it... On, a level of, why this person is important, the film never satisfies that.
No, but I mean, for all it explains that he could have, any job. He could be a baseball player. He could be a school teacher. It doesn't matter because that's, how little his specific job matters in this movie, which is crazy.
I think
his job
is why we care. They do take for granted that, they go in and it's, it already has this sense of dread. He trips and falls on his face, which... Angie and I think, can say with confidence we have done stuff on that level of, and you would just be like, they're clumsy doofuses. But because it's Stephen Hawking, it's not just a trip and fall. And also because they, it's slow motion and his head hits, it's just,
There's
a scene
where he...
Oh, that shot's in the trailer. It's even
such a big deal.
There's this and it's at his desk and he knocks a coffee cup off his desk and I was like, oh my god, if that meant that someone had the disease, I have the disease 80 times over.
Yeah, it's just kind of it already expects you to know who it is, and I am aware of who Stephen Hawking is, but largely because of his place in pop culture, not I don't really understand physics.
Yeah, I feel like when you walk away from a well-done biopic, you feel you walk away with a sense of who the person was and why they're important and you walk away being wow, I'm so happy that I learned so much about this incredibly iconic figure. I did not feel that way at all.
No, they convince you he's a big deal because they show his books about how well he's doing and the awards he gets, but you don't really understand why. But my bigger
problem convince you he's a big deal because people keep saying, Stephen, you're a big deal.
You're a big deal. Yeah. exactly. Like, it's very much like that.
Do you guys think that the quality of the movie overall is going to take away from Eddie Redmayne's chance at getting a nomination?
I don't think so.
The Oscars really loves a good transformative performance, and, like, he does mimic Hawking really well, and, like, he does, you know, because you see him go through the whole degeneration where his body starts curling in and he starts losing his ability to speak, and I know all that is impressive, but I had a really hard time getting pulled into this movie, so, like, for me, there are more interesting performances out there, because I also feel like he had a roadmap, and I'm not saying it must be easy to play Stephen Hawking, but there was, like, a roadmap, where, like, to me, a more interesting performance came from, like, Jake Gyllenhaal and Nightcrawler.
But, like, I think that I felt like his performance on a technical level is astounding. I was actually really blown away by how well he does the slow progression from someone who, you know, walks like I do to someone who is, you know, completely kind of limited to this wheelchair. I was really impressed by that. I don't think that the performance is as good when it comes to, like, feeling like you really get a good sense of who this character is and, like, getting to know him. And I don't really fault Eddie Redmayne for that, because I think that a lot of that blame lies on the filmmakers, like the director.
I think the movie tries to do too much and then ultimately achieves little is my problem. But another issue I had was this movie actually made me dislike Stephen Hawking. Like,
because he's kind of a dick?
Yeah, he's totally a dick. Like, also, they keep talking about his dick. His literal dick comes up so much in this movie, both figuratively and metaphorically, guys. Wait, those are the same thing. It's been a long day, both literally and metaphorically.
The thing is, though, that was a weird thing to me. They talk about his penis a lot and whether it works, and the answer is yes, because he has three kids, which...
Also, we talk about it three times separately. Like, there are three.
We talk about it all the time, but... But the movie never shows him being a sexual being, which I think is such a bizarre choice. Like, it was kind of like the way that I was saying that people keep talking about how brilliant he is, but the movie never explains, like, why he's, like, how brilliant he is or, like, why that matters. It's kind of the same thing with his penis. Exactly. Like,
Hawking's penis, and I don't. Let me clarify. But, like, there's, like, a scene where his friend flat out asks him, like, so can you still get it up? And he's like, it's a different system. Yes, I can. And you're like, that was not a good Stephen Hawking. I didn't know how to do it not be offensive, so that was what I came up with. Anyway, it's like, it seems like the importance is not that Stephen Hawking has a sexual side and is a person beyond his brain, but just that he is a man who can get a hard on. Like, it just seems so chauvinistic and stupid. Like,
it just annoyed me that people kept talking about his penis, and I was like, well, if we're going to keep talking about it, like, I would have been really interested to see, like, the, you know, him and Jane actually being sexual once his disease starts to kick in. I think that would have been interesting. I don't need, like, a full-on, like, you know, nymphomaniac-style sex scene.
No.
Would have been.
I just thought of something.
You look like you were about to explode just now.
Because there's a scene in Monkey Shines, which is a horror movie about a man who becomes, like, paralyzed from the neck down, but he has a sex scene in it, because, again, different system. And it made me, we're talking about that, and, like, that movie is not a good movie, but there is a sex scene between him and an able-bodied woman that actually shows you a lot about their relationship, and I feel like something like that in this movie would have been really worthwhile, especially because sex is such a major part of the relationship between these two people and how it affects everything, frankly.
Exactly. I mean, it's a really big problem because, as we've talked about, this movie is not at all about his science or his work. It's very, very, like, those are very minor
superficially parts. About those
it's
things.
Really, it's really about him and his relationship with this woman, and one of the reasons that I think we don't get a good sense of it is that we never really see them being, like, there's some scenes early on of them being, like, kind of, like, cute and romantic, which I thought were really, like, nicely done, like, they had good chemistry in those scenes and whatnot, but especially as they get older and she just kind of becomes this caretaker, you don't really get a good sense of what they're like as, like, husband and wife, as, like, two people who are fucking, as, like, two people who are still, like, really into each other.
I actually think that's a really good point, because as much as they talk about his penis, we don't see their sex life, and again, it's not like I want some kind of, you know, fetishistic moment of Hawking, but, like, because it is such a crucial part of the movie...
If they're, like, going to keep emphasizing the love story... Like, show us what that means. Like,
show us what their marriage is aside from her, like, literally having to put his clothes on and feed him and care for him. And, like, it seemed very uneven, I think, the portrait is what we're saying. And I personally was disappointed because, like, I like James Marsh's, like, documentary work. Like, he did Man on Wire and Project Nim, which I thought were both really complex and interesting portraits. But Theory of Everything, it just didn't do it for me. I was pretty bored, and ultimately, like, Stephen Hawking came off kind of like an asshole for the way he behaves towards people, where he's pretty condescending through most of the movie, and actually really kind of disrespectful to his wife a lot.
I don't even mind that he's kind of an asshole. I do mind that the movie never really seems to be all that interested in like exploring that side of him, or really any side of him except the most superficial. So I don't know. The whole movie, I thought, look, I was hoping for an extraordinary movie about two extraordinary people. Instead, I got like a really boring movie about two characters that I never really felt that I knew that well or really cared about that much. I wouldn't be mad if Eddie Redmayne got an Oscar nomination, because like I said, I think on a technical level, I was blown away. So I understand it, absolutely. But the movie as a whole, eh.
Yeah, no shade, but I was bored.
That's disappointing to hear. I was kind of looking forward to this one.
Well, there's always the Imitation Game. We'll see if that one's any better.
Oh, that is true. I'm looking forward to that as well.
So many good biopics.
So if your phone's ringing, I just sent you a text, but it's while we're seeing, and maybe we'll share the picture at some point, because it's one of Christie's famous faces.
That'll happen.
I was trying so hard not to giggle and make the camera shift to me. But on that note, maybe we should move on to our next movie. Which is another pretty major awards contender. It's Foxcatcher, Bennett Miller's movie. And this one stars Channing Tatum as Mark Schultz. He's a former Olympic gold medalist in the Olympics, and now he's kind of come down from that win, and he's trying to get back at it so he can go to the Olympics again and hit it big, and he really wants to be the best in the world. And it doesn't seem like he's really getting closer to achieving that by training with his older brother, who's played by Mark Ruffalo. So instead, he gets this opportunity from Steve Carell's character, John DuPont, who is like this super wealthy man-child who can just be like, I want to be a wrestling coach, build a gym, and start a wrestling team. And so Mark goes to live with John, and he gets trained and ready for, you know, like the World Championship and then the Olympics and all that stuff. And things get a little weird between Mark and John, and there's lots of tension, and like John wants to get Mark Ruffalo's character involved, and shit starts to break down.
Mark's brother. Older brother Dave, who's also an Olympic gold medalist wrestler.
Mm-hmm. And so it's basically kind of this strange battle between the three of them. And this is definitely a movie that I think people got a little too crazy about too fast. I feel like the people who saw it first might have hyped it up too much, because I was walking into this one expecting the world. I really couldn't wait to see Steve Carell's performance. But, you know, he's good in it. I don't want to take away from what he accomplishes, but I think, like, almost like the shtick of it was ruined in the trailers, where I kind of knew what the character was about, so when I went into it, I wasn't as wowed as I thought I would be. And also,
I kind of feel like if you've seen the trailers, you don't get that much deeper of an understanding of that character after having watched the whole movie, which is really disappointing.
It's so disappointing, because it's such a, like, a fascinating guy, and like his behavior is so bizarre, and like just, I mean, everything, his facial expression, the way he walks, you would just expect so much more from someone like that. But I mean, really, like the case, it's the case with all the characters in this movie, everything is just really flat to me. I feel like we're watching all these characters do this thing and try to practice and achieve these huge goals, but you're never kind of in it with them. You're never in it to the point where you actually care about him winning these medals and stuff.
Yeah, I kind of felt similarly. Like I said, one of my issues was that, like, Steve Carell, I'm going to sound like I'm repeating myself, but it's another performance kind of like Eddie Redmayne's that we're talking about, where I think that he's doing good work. I was really impressed by it on some level, you know, basically that it's so different from anything that we've seen him do, and he's, like, very good at it. But I think the movie kind of, you know, doesn't give him enough to do. Like I said, if you've seen the trailer and you have a vague idea of what the story is, then that's really all you learn about the character. You don't learn anything you don't get to know him that much better than that, which is disappointing.
It's the same of all three of them, though. I mean, I think all three of them deliver great performances, but I don't think you learn anything more about these three guys beyond what you've seen in the trailer.
If you've read the synopsis and you've seen the trailer, that's about it. There's like, I wish that there was more to this movie than that. There isn't. It's also kind of slow, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, but I have to admit, I saw it when I was tired and I was like getting really impatient.
Yeah, I saw this right after Interstellar, so that was close to 6 hours of movie time, and I was ready for Foxcatcher to be over.
have a question. I haven't seen this one yet, but it was supposed to come out in December of 2013, and then it got pushed because they said it needs some more time to put it together. It sounds like it didn't have enough time to come together to something that really impressed you guys.
I don't think time would have changed anything. I think it's just the material and the way that Bennett Miller and the writers approached it. They just, it's like they didn't dig deep and add layers. It's like, here's this story, let's just tell it. And they didn't think about it beyond that. And like another pretty detrimental error, not error, but like flaw in this movie is that you see the big ending coming from the second that movie starts.
I mean, I actually knew the big ending already because I know the, like, when this movie, before this movie came out, I was researching it, and, like, if you go to Wikipedia, because it's all based on real people.
It's like the first sentence, yeah.
See, I didn't know anything except for what I saw in the film's promo campaign, but I still knew, and I mean, I called it exactly what happens in the end of the movie. Within, I want to say, like, within minutes of Steve Carell's first appearance in the movie.
I want to go back for a second to talk about, because we were talking about how it's slow. So I have to admit, I don't know if I mostly didn't like that just because I was tired, and I don't know if it's personal bias on my part, but there were times where I was getting impatient with it because I was like, it felt like the filmmakers were mistaking something being like slow and quiet for something being important. Like, kind of like, if we just leave the camera on Channing Tatum looking sad long enough, it'll get more important. It kind of felt like that to me, but like I said, like, I admit maybe I was biased.
Well, not necessarily important, but I think maybe they were, maybe that they thought
they were
doing what they achieved in the trailer. Like, when you look at the trailer and it's that part where Channing Tatum is standing in front of the mirror and he bashes his head in, there's something about the way that that plays with the music that it's paired with that makes it really unnerving and unsettling. Like, and that's what you should feel when Steve Carell's character's around. You should be, like, uncomfortable. And, I mean, I guess I did feel uncomfortable to a point, but just because he's so awkward-looking, not because I felt, like threatened or like he was unhinged at all.
Yeah, I mean, I felt
so
more...
Are the prosthetics a problem?
What?
Are the prosthetics a problem?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's more of just, you know, how the fact that the movie overall didn't come together well enough. I mean, if it did, I think the prosthetics looked fine.
Yeah, I will say Channing Tatum gives a pretty good dramatic performance that again I think is hampered in a bit by the fact that his character isn't as developed and fleshed out as I would like him to be. Mark Ruffalo, I thought, did very good work with kind of the least showy performance. Like, you've got Steve Carell being like this really weird person that doesn't look or act anything like Steve Carell, and we've never seen him like this before, and it's mind-blowing. And then you've got Channing Tatum, who has like lately had a better and better reputation, but this is still like a big deal for him to be like this like straightforwardly dramatic, like meaty role. But then Mark Ruffalo kind of just like comes in and he does his Mark Ruffalo thing. I was really impressed by the way that he took a character who could have been really boring and two-dimensional and just tried his best to breathe life into that character. He made the character feel so much more warm and alive and, like, more interesting.
That's why he's so likable.
Yeah. It was kind of like, what, you know, it's kind of like how he's, like, in Avengers for, like, 10 minutes, but he was, like, everyone's favorite character.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that moves with charisma. Like, you can't help but to see him and like whatever he's doing.
Do you want a Foxcatcher spinoff with the brother?
Yeah, sure. Oh. Why not? I don't know. I just like Mark Ruffalo, so I'd probably just be like, sure, has Mark Ruffalo in it.
I don't know if I was as thrilled with this whole world of wrestling as presented in this movie as I thought I would be. I was just very not into it. Like, I didn't give a shit if Channing Tatum's character won the, what was it, the world championship and then went on to the Olympics and all that bullshit. It's like I didn't care. But then again, I feel like we're just totally trashing this movie. It's not a bad movie by any means. It's just, you know, when people have been hyping it up so much, it's a serious punch to the gut when it doesn't live up to those expectations.
I mean, it's been getting quote-unquote Oscar buzz for over a year now because people thought with it being Bennett Miller and with this transformation of Steve Carell. But where do you think
I went into this pretty sure that Steve Carell was going to blow my mind in this movie, and that was not the case. I think, if anything, I walked out thinking Channing Tatum might deserve the nomination more.
I'm going to sound like I'm talking about Theory of Everything, but it's just, I don't think it's necessarily a bad movie, but I wish that the movie had dug a little deeper. I wish that it had, like, tried a little, like, developed the characters a little bit more, spent a little bit more time showing us who they are and how they, like, what makes them tick, and again, why we should really care that much what happens to them.
I gotta say, I've been kind of disappointed. We're starting to see the stuff that's supposed to be the big Oscar stuff, and I gotta say, some of the weirder releases we've had earlier this year, I think, were much stronger films. Like, I keep going back to, like, Under the Skin, which
was,
like,
a... But that's not gonna win the Oscar.
No, but it's a far more interesting movie. And, I mean, these are all, like, Oscar...
Like, Birdman lived up to expectations. I'll be thrilled when that gets nominations. And also, I want to see Whiplash kill it, too. I think, you know what, there's one movie that people, like, were going nuts over the second it hit Sundance, and that movie blew my mind.
I am Team Boyhood, just in case you're wondering.
All right.
Kind of a weird experiment. It's kind of weird and a little bit experimental in some ways, but I think that enough people liked it that it has a good chance of getting a nomination. I don't know about a win, but a nomination.
We'll talk about the Oscars. What's the consensus on Foxcatcher here? Angie, do you think people should see it?
Sure. I don't know.
That's really enthusiastic.
Right. I don't know. If you have been listening, I think I have been giving off the general vibe of, like, I don't really dislike it, but I don't like it. I feel pretty much indifferent to this movie. I'm glad I saw it so that I can have seen those performances and, like, that I can talk about it and that I was curious about it. But, yeah, sure. Why not? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't care.
I'm gonna say something like along similar lines. Is like, if you feel like it's important to you to keep up on, you know, the potential Oscar contenders, it's worthwhile, and it's not. I mean, it's not a waste of money by any means. It's just, you know, don't go in listening to all the people who have been going nuts about it and saying it's gonna win this and that and all that nonsense, because I don't know if that's gonna pan out.
This might be like, I don't even like dislike this movie. This might be what like. One of the most indifferent feelings I've had about a movie in recent weeks.
Let's move on to things we have lots of feels about.
Yeah, let's.
So we want to talk about how it seems Marvel and DC are finally paying attention to, and Sony for that matter, are finally paying attention to women who have gone to see superhero movies. We want to start off by talking about some of the newest developments, which is that reports are coming in that Michelle McLaren is in talks or a frontrunner for the Wonder Woman movie directing job. Which, if you don't know Michelle McLaren, you have not been watching amazing television lately. She has been directing Breaking Bad and Walking Dead and my personal favorite, Game of Thrones. I actually have my little Brienne here. Actually Perry gave me.
I'm creating like a little collection right behind
I'm slowly
you.
Just going to have tons of Funko Pops.
Every year it's going to stack up.
But Michelle McLaren, it's cool because like a few weeks ago whenever they said that they were like, oh, we're going to do a Wonder Woman movie, I wrote a thing for Cinema Blend about five directors I'd like to see direct a Wonder Woman movie. And Michelle McLaren was one of my picks, which is like the more I thought about it, the more I really wanted that to be the case. And as much as I would love to see women directing superhero movies, period, like it's not because she's a woman. It's because Michelle McLaren has had a really solid trajectory on Game of Thrones. And like, you know, Alan Taylor came from Game of Thrones. Like, they should be pulling more talent from Game of Thrones. And if you're going to have a Wonder Woman movie where you want a complex female character who can kick tons of ass while being interesting and not just like, I'm tough and blah, 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 like, Game of Thrones is the place to look. And, like, memorably, Michelle McLaren did the Bear and the Maiden episode, which had tons of good Brienne stuff, and I like the idea of this. So, I'm super excited about that. Do you guys have thoughts on Michelle McLaren?
I like the idea that she's a TV director, too. I feel like, you know, picking some other film director that we've seen a lot of stuff from before, you know, it's going to keep everything in, I guess in this case, not the Marvel mold, but the DC mold. So I feel like the fact that she's worked on so many different shows and shows that, like, push boundaries a lot, I feel like that could really spice this up a lot. But it's also going to come down to who gets cast in that. Well,
right. So
beyond who's already
you know Gal Gadot, right?
I want to know what that movie's about before I like go crazy with the idea.
Right, but so am I crazy, or did we have a conversation on the podcast like a while ago about how we wanted Michelle McLaren to jump from TV to movie directing? Or am I crazy?
Know if we talked on the podcast, or
I just talk about it all the time personally. So yes, I am super excited.
Up, like, I know that privately, Angie and I talked about this a lot because, like, you know, the more people came up with, like, especially because when DC said they wanted it to be a female director, and a lot of people said Lexi Alexander, and Lexi Alexander is bored to death of people talking about her in conjunction with this movie. She's like, I did Punisher Warzone, I'm out. Like, she doesn't want to do another superhero movie. And so people are like, oh, well, she doesn't want to do it, which is so frustrating. There are so many female directors. Like, just because Lexi Alexander doesn't do it. I love her, but we don't need to act like, well, now what are we going to do and throw our hands up in the air? Like, Michelle McLaren is a really solid pick. And, like, at this point, if they don't manage to sign her on, I have to say, like, it's going to be hard for me to be as excited about this movie. Like, I'm already really excited about this movie that doesn't exist with Michelle McLaren, because I like what she's done so far so much that, like, this is a very cool possibility.
Yeah, I mean, she's someone that I think could use the publicity. I think it's a great PR move on DC's part to be like, we're going to make the first female superhero movie, and it's going to be directed by a woman. I think, you know.
Do you guys know who else was meeting for? Do you know who else was meeting with DC, with Warner Brothers for the job?
Ish. No, do you?
Jennifer Kent, the Babadook, and Linka Glatter, who apparently has done some work on Homeland.
Oh, yeah.
Those are all really good.
We're going to talk to you about the Babadook in a couple of weeks when it opens, and let me tell you, like, spoilers, the Babadook is amazing. Babadook. We're saying it like American.
You know, it's amazing, but I think I'd much prefer Michelle McLaren over the other two. I think she's kind of proved that she can handle it. You know what the one thing I'm hoping for, though, in this movie? I want to see a Wonder Woman movie, but with no romance. Like, none at all.
I feel like we're going to be close on that. But let's talk about other superhero developments. We're excited about Michelle McLaren, excited about Wonder Woman, and yeah, I'm with you on, like, can we just make it about Wonder Woman and not have her be like, oh, that, dude.
That's what's going to sell me on it. But, so two other ones, and actually one in particular that I'm flipping out over at this point, is Suicide Squad. I love the idea of a villain team-up movie, first of all. And I'm really into, like, the idea of seeing Harley Quinn in it, too. You know, nothing's been confirmed yet, but Margaret Robbie from Wolf of Wall Street, and I forget that new movie she's doing with Will Smith. She is...
Focus.
Focus, yes, that's it. She's rumored to be taking that role, and I'm pretty excited to see that. And again, I feel like, it, you know, director's important, obviously, but I also like to see who's cast around these people, and... They have a pretty damn good lineup coming together. What was the last stuff? Jared Leto as the Joker, Jai Courtney to play Deadshot. I mean, and then Will Smith might be in it also. That's a really interesting, like, fresh feeling group there, and I think I'm gonna be really pleased with the dynamic between the two. All of them. And
I'm really curious how they're gonna come up with Harley Quinn, because there's so many different looks for Harley Quinn. And I'm not going to lie, my favorite is the one from the animated series.
You know, I told you guys that my parents have, like, a random piece of artwork of Harley Quinn. Like, I never read a single comic or anything, but in, like, ever since I was, like, an infant, in my living room in my parents' house has always been this gigantic, I don't know if it's a poster or a painting or what, of Harley Quinn for, like, no reason at all. Like, I guarantee you, if you ask my parents, who is that? They'd be like, a Joker lady. I don't know.
Fair enough, that's right.
But I've always kind of been really interested in seeing that character because it's always stuck with me since I was a kid. I also do like the idea of, like, I'm all for female directors, obviously, but I like the idea of David Ayer directing this. Like, even though Fury didn't really live up to everyone's expectations, I think he could bring some, like some really, like, ruthless-looking violence to this and, like,
Fury I didn't love, but I think, like, End of Watch, like, if it had, like, that kind of, like, you know, zippy but kind of gritty.
Can we wedge Jake Gyllenhaal into Suicide Squad? I don't know enough about Jake Gyllenhaal in this.
I wouldn't mind seeing him in a superhero movie at this point.
Yeah, like, beef him up and put him in a David Ayer movie? Come on. That'd be awesome.
Let's talk a little bit about this other one, too, because I'm very interested in this idea. We've actually been talking about a potential female-led Spider-Man spinoff movie for a while. I think it was, I mean, like, a couple of months ago the idea first came up, and then just recently there was...
I think Sony was actually the first studio to announce a female-led superhero movie, but they seem to be the farthest behind because they don't have a release date, they have no idea who they...
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Sony has their ducks in a row. I feel like the failure of The Amazing Spider-Man kind of just, like, shook them up too much, where they're just like, you know, we just gotta, like, start saying shit to keep up with them. I don't know if it's really gonna happen, but let's just keep saying it, and people go nuts. And, I mean, it's true. It happens, but... DC quickly stepped all over that Sinister Six movie for me, and now I'm, like, a million times more thrilled about Suicide Squad.
Oh, sorry, Sony.
Yeah, but, you know, the idea of a female Spider-Man team-up movie does intrigue me. I mean, again, it's just a rumor, so we don't know if this is happening, but the report is that they're developing a female team-up movie And it comes from an original concept, not a comic. And the tentative title is Glass Ceiling, which, like, whatever. And that rumor also throws out characters like Black Cat, Silver Sable, Spider-Girl, Silk, Spider-Woman. So, you know, I mean, that just sounds different to me. It's one of those things where it's kind of just like a fun idea to think about until they actually say what the story is, because I don't really understand how you bring all those characters together. Whereas, like, the Suicide Squad makes a little more sense, where they're like a team of mercenaries trying to, like, do crazy shit to...
Yeah. I've read Spider-Man, but I haven't read, like, Spider-Woman. I'm less familiar. I know a little bit about, I don't even remember which ones. They're on a shelf I can't see from here, but I've read some Spider-Man. And I don't know as much about those characters, so I'm, like, interested, and I'd like to see it be, like, we've talked before on this show about how we'd like to see more mid-range comic book movies, where, like, they don't all have to be these huge, mind-blowing things. Like, some of them could be smaller, kind of weirder stories.
Well, that's what I'm hoping they do with, like, Cyborg and The Flash, stuff like that.
By the way, I actually met Cyborg before. Like, in pre-fame, pre-meeting, yeah.
It makes me so happy that they went with someone that we don't really know, too. I wish that would happen more often. Like, you know, like they're doing with the director of Wonder Woman. She's not really a household name yet, but she has, like, this huge body of work, is very accomplished. We know that she can handle this, so why not do that more often?
Totally.
Yeah, for
Let's
sure.
Let's move on to our last exciting superhero lady, or super heroine.
Right. So, Captain Marvel. Okay, Captain Marvel has been around for a long time, and in the last few years, they kind of relaunched her, or not relaunched her, but the character had a different name, and she only, in the last few years, took over the Captain Marvel name, and since then, she has become incredibly popular. So for a while now, fans have asked Kevin Feige and, like, the Marvel people over and over, like, when is Captain Marvel happening? Are we going to have Captain Marvel? Is it going to happen? Are you going to do it? Is it going to happen soon? And he kept kind of doing that thing that, like, you know, studio people always do, where they're not, like, they will neither confirm nor deny, and they'll just be like, I don't know, we're thinking about it. Maybe.
And he actually wrote a really great piece on Kevin Feige. She being like, maybe, like, look it up on Slash Film. It was great. She really calls him out.
Thank you. But after all that, they finally announced that they are actually officially going to make this movie. At this point, we don't know that much about it. We don't know who's directing it. We don't know who's going to star in it. We don't know what the plot line is going to be, or, like, how this character will be introduced or where she'll fit in. But I'm just excited in general about the idea that it's happening, that after all this time, Marvel is finally introducing one. At the same time, though, I have to admit, I'm kind of annoyed that it took them this long. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy was their 10th film. Captain Marvel is not their next film. It's going to be, like, I don't know off.
It's way, like, down the line. I think the talk is that they're going to introduce her in, they were thinking about introducing her in Avengers 3 or something, because that's the movie that comes out right before Captain Marvel.
It does make us sound kind of desperate that we're like, and they might make a Spider-Lady movie, and that, like, but it's like, that's the thing, like, we're such an ignored audience, like, women who go see superhero movies, despite the fact that, like, women have been going to see superhero movies and the numbers are really supportive. It's like DC and Marvel are like, oh, I guess we should make a movie about women. And it's like, well, yeah, there's a lot of great female characters that you guys keep shunting to the side.
One of the great things about Captain Marvel, if they don't screw it up, is that she's very, like, one of the reasons that the character has become so popular is because so many female fans have, like, really connected with her. Like, the Captain Marvels, like, super fans call themselves the Carol Corps, and they're, like, super into having better representation in comics for people who are not straight white men. They're really just into it from, like, a feminist perspective. So if they don't fuck it up in the movie, it'll be a really different perspective on the Marvel Universe. It's probably still going to end in a big aerial battle sequence over city, because let's be real, it's still a Marvel movie. But it'll just be nice to have a fresh perspective. Like I said, with this and with all the other stuff, on the one hand, I'm so excited that all these different studios are finally being like, maybe it is time to, like, try and do this. On the other hand, I'm just like,
also, because these are stories we've heard a million times. Like, Angie pointed out that there's a story saying that Batman v Superman, we're going to see Batman's parents die again. How many times do I need to see Bruce Wayne's die?
Spider-Man had, like, two origin story movies in, like, you know, what was it, like, 10, 15 years?
Wait, we never even talked about that really silly rumor about the Aunt May spinoff. There's another female-led superhero.
I didn't even read those articles.
Oh my god.
Like, no. This Field is not going to be.
I wrote it up the other day, and as I'm writing it, I'm like, is this really what I'm talking about right now? That's like the joke.
I want to mention one other female-led superhero-type movie that, or it's not a movie. I'm really excited about Agent Carter on the new TV show.
Oh, it looks pretty good. I like what I saw at New York Comic Con, and I like her. I like Hayley Atwell a lot.
I think that she's incredibly charming. I thought that Captain America: The First Avenger was good, and that she was a character that even right after that movie, I walked away being like, I wish that we had gotten to know her better. So I'm very excited about that. And that's actually out of all the things that we talked about, the first one that we're gonna see.
Yeah.
So.
Yay!
Yeah.
I'm curious to see, like, who gets the leg up on this first. Because, I mean, it's, you know, no matter what they do and no matter how far apart the release dates are, it's always going to be, like, DC Marvel.
No, totally. No matter how many superhero movies they release, until it's a very common thing to release girl superhero movies, it's going to be that thing. Like, remember when The Heat opened and people were like, oh, well, you know, if The Heat doesn't do well, then they're just not going to make action comedies about women anymore, because if a dude fails.
Remember Elektra and Catwoman and how because those failed, we have waited this fucking long for another?
It's true, though.
Those are terrible goddamn movies. So here's the thing. I'm super excited that we may potentially get all these movies, but more than anything, I want them to really make a great story and a great movie, because I don't want to hear fanboys or even fangirls go, well, but they don't make good super women movies. Because so far they haven't, but we could. The stories are there, the characters are there, and the fan base, most importantly, is there. So can you, like, my plea to these producers is, like, don't think about what you think women want. Like, look at what your readers are responding to in the comics and give us that.
Yes. Amen to that. I have nothing to add. A+.
Yeah. I like that. All right, on that note, that is a wrap on this episode of Popcorn and Prosecco. If you like what you see, continue to follow us on our YouTube channel, Popcorn Prosecco. We are on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We are on Facebook. We have our own website, popcornprosecco.com. And we are also on iTunes. And go there. Be sure to rate us, like us, comment, all of that good stuff, because we really love to hear it. And then the three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, you want to take it first?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KristyPuchko, and you can find my work all over the web, but you can find the highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and you can find my writing at slashfilm.com.
And I'm on Twitter as well, P. Nemiroff, and I'm also writing for Collider, so you can catch all my work there. That's it for tonight's episode. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much for watching.
What do you hope to achieve, Mark?
I want to be the best in the world.
Good.